Blog Talk Radio. Tons of gold in Uganda. what does that mean for Africa, African people at home and abroad? So again, this is MPH Radio. I'm the voice of MPH Radio. And right now, we want you to get your pen and paper out. And we want to ask this question to you as it relates to freedom. We want to give you something to think about. Some people believe that freedom is when a group of people are in the position of not worrying about power, influence, or wealth, where they can make free decisions. Again, freedom is being contextualized by the concept of a group of people who are in a position to make decisions where they don't have to worry about power, influence, or wealth. Following next, we will bring in Susie, member of MPH Radio, and she will share with you some history as relates to MPH Black Mini Facts. We'd like to welcome Susie to MPH Radio. Welcome, Susie.
Good evening. Today, the Black Mini Facts for June 18, 2022 are coming from the PRSP calendar of 2021. On the 12th of June, Medgar Evers, American civil rights activist, was assassinated in 1863. On the 13th, we have Walter Rodney, Pan-Africanist, scholar, and revolutionary activist, was murdered by neo-colonialist Running Dogs in 1980. On the 14th, Jay Standard patented the refrigerator in 1891. On the 15th, Congress of Racial Equality, which is CORE, was founded in 1943. On the 16th, African student uprising began in Soweto and spread through South Africa in 1976. On the 17th, James Weldon Johnson, African poet and writer, was born in 1871. And the last minute fact for this week, June 18th, is CIA trained and teleguided forces overthrow progressive government of Guatemala in 1954. There, I have given you the Black Mini Facts from the PRSP calendar of 2021.
We'd like to thank you, Susan, for your MPH Black Mini Facts, and we'll make our quick transition, bring in Brother Alex. He will share with you a message to the community. Brother Alex, welcome to MPH Radio.
Hello, and
yes.
I would like to, hello, Mr. Lee. I would like to welcome everyone to the show today. And again, I would like to thank the guests who will speak today. And I thank you, Mr. Lee, and Ms. Susie, for bringing us this knowledge. And again, uncovering history that most of us have never learned in public education. So, this weekend, we'll bring a couple of holidays together for the first time in American history. Many people all over the world will celebrate Father's Day, but fewer beyond the borders of America will celebrate National Juneteenth Day. Let's start with Father's Day. I send out a brotherly greeting to all men who take responsibility for the needs of their children, whether biological, step, or adopted. I remember the annual Real Fathers, Real Men Awards, shows by Tom Joyner, where he sought out hundreds of men to give them recognition for stepping up and being a mentor and example of manhood for the community to follow. It meant so much to hear the stories of good men who put faith, good work ethic, discipline, education, respect, understanding, and compassion as a solid foundation in their relationship with their children. Tom often told us of his wonderful relationship with his father, Hercules, and his grandfather, Oscar, on how they helped shape Tom's life in going to college and being goal-oriented and a plan for success. Many children will never know that good father figures in their lives as their fathers lay in graves down by gun violence in America. Other fathers have died because of bad law enforcement officers. Still others have died from diseases and natural causes. The chance for a child to see the sparkle in their father's eyes when they accomplish a goal or is recognized in a special event is one of life's most gratifying moments. A father loves to brag about their child's achievements. Many times I have identified myself as the son of my father, John Joyner. I am one of his 12 children. When I visit my hometown, friends often tell me stories of my father's heartfelt goodness and honor. There would be stories of my father giving them a free haircut in hard times, him repairing a broken washing machine, replacing a set of wooden steps on an old house for a widower, preparing a bag of mixed vegetables from his garden chosen in love for a hungry family. There was a story of a monetary loan to a factory worker to make sure he kept his lights on. My father stood by his promise to help where father had a heart of gold to match my mother's diamond heart in giving. I saw this giving heart every day, and I felt his wonderful love for me and my siblings. I remember our talks about life, work ethics, education, sports, politics, finances, relationships, and religion. My father had lived a hard life. As a young child, he worked to give up his early education to help his single-parent mother. He became a provider and mentor to his younger brothers and sisters, and they loved him dearly, knowing how he sacrificed for them. His name became honorable because he was a decent, hard-working, and honest man. My father is now resting now from his earthly life. One well done 12 children he helped rear. Every day was Father's Day to me when he was alive because I learned so much from him. I'm a better father because of his teachings. He was my hero. So today I say happy Father's Day to good men like my dad. God bless and keep you, my brothers, because being a real father and a real man is hard work. Being trained by the best did make it a lot easier for me. Promise of Freedom Day. Juneteenth, National Independence Day. Jubilee Day. Emancipation Day and Freedom Day is considered the longest running African-American holiday in America. Many of the freed slaves celebrated the actual Emancipation Proclamation Day on January 1st, 1863. There were parades in many cities, and many black men joined the army to help in the fight to save the Union until 1865. More than 300,000 men, women, and children became soldiers, sailors, cooks, spies, medical assistants for the wounded, and supply personnel to support Lincoln's promise to freedom. The United States colored troops fought in every major engagement and were respected on the battlefield as worthy opponents. Over 60,000 died of disease, fatal injuries, and prison hangings. Freedom was earned by these brave men, women, and children who believed that America was going to support their cause for total freedom under the law. They dreamed of a better country than the one that had enslaved and turned its back on them for centuries. There were black army units at Appomattox. They celebrated with the white troops, for as a combined force, they had made General Lee surrender on April 9, 1865. 2.5 years after a proclamation made by Lincoln in 1863, federal troops were finally dispatched to Texas and the Western Territory to actually enforce the law. The proclamation was read by Union General Gordon Granger on June 19, 1865, in Galveston, Texas, after his arrival with some colored troop units. The white slave owners knew about the proclamation for over 2 years. They did not honor it or tell their slaves. Once Vicksburg fell into Union hands on July 4, 1863, many deserters fled to Texas with the news that the South was losing the war and Lincoln had issued the Emancipation Proclamation. The slave owners knew that the Union was marching on Atlanta and would not be interested in Texas at that time. They could do as they pleased until the Union troops came in force, and only then would they have to obey the law. The slave owners continued to lie and mistreat the slaves because they were kept illiterate and humble to their masters. Some slaves did run off to the surrounding territories of Oklahoma, Arkansas, Kansas, New Mexico, and Mexico. The slaves that stayed behind continued to be in bondage because they knew of no other type of life. Many free blacks who could read and write knew of the proclamation decree, but did not discuss it with the slaves in bondage because they would be shot or hanged on the spot. It seems as if anything that benefits the people of color takes years to be enforced. They always have to wait for civil rights and laws and justice to be administered. Only four states have made Juneteenth a paid state holiday. It has never been acknowledged in North or South Dakota or Hawaii. The United States Congress finally accepted arguments and proposed legislation, made it a holiday on June 17, 2021, by President Joe Biden's signature. For years, the day has given people of color a chance to meet and celebrate the partial promise of freedom. The 40 acres and a mule proposal was taken away. President Andrew Johnson reversed and annulled all legislation proposed to help the Negroes in America. The Freedmen Bureau's bills were passed to help the people of color after the Civil War, but Johnson opposed much of the Bureau's funding and programs to help equalize the poor Negroes in America. Interestingly, reparations were paid for many years to white slave owners. On April 16, 1862, Lincoln signed a bill that paid the white slave owners up to $300 for every enslaved person. The white slave owners had protested that they were losing valuable property and needed compensation. Yet they felt that all the slaves taken from their homeland and brought to America were owed nothing. Millions of slaves died in the holds of the slave ships. The others that lived were whipped, beaten, sexually abused, poorly clothed, and fed. They also had to live in shacks that made for poor shelter from the elements. The disgrace and disrespect they suffered can never be compensated. No amount of money would right this wrong to the descendants of Africans brought here in bondage to America. Juneteenth is a day to reflect on how, after more than 400 years, we are still being treated unfairly by laws being passed to disenfranchise the people. American history contains the start of racism in this country. It has been filled with bitter content and aversion of the truth that has been taught in the public school system. The history books are full of lies and omissions. I had the desire and the opportunity to do the diligent research of the facts to learn Americans' true history before the doors close to all that is being hidden from us. For the truth will set our minds and souls free. I want America to honor its creed of justice for all. Juneteenth will be a day I will try to put aside a lifetime of racism, discrimination, and despair, of inequality that still exists in this country. Let me not take all the fun out of the holiday spirit. Let us celebrate the ancestors' Freedom Day, as many are trying to roll back the clock and take it away. Our ancestors fought and gave their lives so we may exist in this land. Let us use Freedom Day to show the world how great and mighty a people we are. Let nothing and nobody hold you back. Ain't no stopping us now. We came from the master's house to the White House to be young. Jesse Jackson, we will make it. Love you, family. Alexander.
We'd like to thank you, Brother Alex, for your message to the community. And we just would like to remind the community on this segment, a message to the community, all views that are expressed are totally the expression of the writer and the author. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. At this particular time, we're going to go to a station break with music with a message. And it will be followed by a segment called Why the West. We are listening to this segment. We will come in and have a discussion of the topic today, which is 328 million tons of gold in Uganda. This is MPH Radio.
this presentation is fundamentally designed to say is this. Africa historically, sub-Saharan Africa, has been fundamental to the global prosperity of the advanced countries. Okay? And Africa had a role to play. It has a role as a raw material producer. We will not allow sub-Saharan Africa to escape that. Okay, we do everything to keep sub-Saharan Africa where it is, also impoverished. It's absolutely vital for the prosperity of everyone else. So let's get clear about that. Okay, and this means all the economic structures, all the global institutions, and the economics we teach everyone is all designed to keep Africa exactly where it is. And whether it is Europe or US or now China, it's always the same. We need Africa to be impoverished because we need those raw materials and we need them dirt cheap. Okay, so that's the message. It doesn't mean to say that there's nothing Africans can do. Of course there is. Okay, but this is the opposition that they're fighting. This is what it's about. Because if Africa does do something different, I assure you living standards of all those in Europe and North America and Asia is going to fall. Okay? And that is a big price to pay. I assure you that the West is not going to allow that without a big fight. Okay? So this is what it's fundamentally about. What I want to show you is how these structures are operating. It's just 20 minutes, so we can't do very much, but just to give you a little bit of an idea. And why I keep the ideology part there is because we are part of the producers of ideology. At universities and academic institutions, we are complicit in this whole enterprise. Okay, so the job of many Western academics is to convince Africans they have to keep doing what they're doing. Okay? And to show them, it's your fault that you're poor. It's not our fault. It's your fault that you're poor. You know? So this is what we do in academic institutions. And I want to show that as well. We just start. This is what it's basically about, so you know what it's about. But I want to just show you the extent to which Africa is specializing in the production of raw materials and basic agricultural goods. We know the basic forces that have caused this underdevelopment. We know it's colonization. I will not discuss that very much because my colleague speaker is going to go into some aspects of this. But I do want to discuss the global economic structures, the global financial institutions, and economic ideology, briefly, to give you a flavor of those. Let me start with this. You can't really see it so easily, but if those of you who are interested, you want the PowerPoint, I'm sure we can make it available to you. But the thing that you really need to see, the top line. Okay. And the extent of dependency is captured by this statistic at the top. Okay? And you compare it with all other income groups, and what you see is essentially in that one statistic how dependent sub-Saharan Africa is on raw material production. Okay? This is the very heart of what makes sub-Saharan Africa beat. Okay? Here, just to have a look at one very important additional statistic, with all this export coming from sub-Saharan Africa, how much does sub-Saharan Africa account for in terms of global trade value? We know there's vast resources coming from there, but look at the bottom line in terms of global trade value. Look at that, 0.5% 1975, 0.95% going down to 0.1, meaning that with all this vast resources being produced, How much are they getting for it? Nothing. Nothing. This is a very significant piece of data. Then I just want to show you what has happened to sub-Saharan Africa, because what we know, and from all studies, no country ever develops without manufacturing. Okay, producing raw materials will not take you anywhere. Producing basic agricultural goods will not take you anywhere. And let's have a look at how much manufacturing activity takes place in sub-Saharan Africa. We can look over the last 15 odd years, 15, 20 years, and we see manufacturing has actually declined as a percentage of the total. This is percentages of total production in sub-Saharan Africa, how much of it is accounted for by manufacturing. So this figure here is 17% of the total. Most of the rest, when we talk of industry, it includes manufacturing, but the bulk of it is mining, okay? Raw material extraction. This is the bulk of it. And here we see actually raw material extraction has stayed the same. What has caused industry to fall is the fall in manufacturing production. This is deliberate because we will never, as Western economists, as Western policymakers, we cannot afford to allow Africa to industrialize and start producing manufactures. Okay, so we will do everything to stop that. And I'm going to show you how we actually block that. It's obvious in certain ways, but it's less obvious in other ways. Now, we have actually seen periods of rapid growth in sub-Saharan Africa, misleading people, saying, oh, you know, we're now doing much better. And this has happened recently. Recently, I've had students come and tell me, we've done much better now. And you can see growth rates rose quite sharply in recent times. Now are starting to go again down. But if you look historically, the same thing happened earlier. Why? Because in these two periods, we had East Asian rapid industrialization processes. So in the earlier period, we had Japan and Korea and Taiwan. Okay, rapid growth, sucking in raw materials from Africa, driving up the prices, and then sub-Saharan African countries grew. Exporting raw materials, they grew. But after those countries finished industrialization, then sub-Saharan African growth rate again fell. Okay, but along comes China. Next wave. Okay, again, sub-Saharan African growth rises, but now China is going down. As many of you now know from the press, China is going down. But sub-Saharan Africa is going down even faster. And we're going to go back to where we were again with very low prices of raw materials, very low growth rates, and again the sorts of poverty that we saw once before. Because, bottom line, sub-Saharan Africa is condemned to this role, just the supplier of raw materials, not a manufacturer. Very recent data showing emerging markets that produce raw materials against emerging markets that produce manufactures. And you can see now with the weakness in the global economy, it's the emerging markets, that's the red line, it's those countries that are suffering the most, the emerging markets producing raw materials. They're suffering the most. And here, it translates into their currencies being butchered. Okay? The currencies are collapsing of these countries, and many of them are sub-Saharan African countries. Some of them are Latin American countries, okay, who also rode that same wave. They thought that raw material production was going to save them. But now they're facing terrible problems. And I'm sorry to say, it's just going to get worse in the next 2 years. It's not going to get any better. And this is what it does in terms of gross domestic product. It's the blue line you should look at. It's the blue line compared with the red line. And what we know is that blue line is really going to go down sharply in the next 2 years. Okay, so relative to the rest of the world, sub-Saharan Africa is going to suffer. Again, why? Because it's condemned to this raw material production. This is basically why. How is it condemned to that? Well, the first and most important is the economic structures. After colonization ended, we needed new structures to keep these countries where they were. Okay? And the first of those is aid. Okay? We give them aid. Aid for what? Actually, we give them aid to keep repressive regimes in power. That's all. Okay? We're not giving them aid for much more except a little bit of infrastructure to make sure those raw materials get to the ports and aren't gotten out of the ground. But for the most part, we give repressive regimes money and power and guns to keep that system going. This is what it's fundamentally about. All the hypocrisy about transparency and democracy and bullshit like that, it's all bullshit. You know? And at least the Chinese don't enter into that bullshit. They say, we don't care about the whole political environment, we just give the money. Okay? And it's for raw material extraction, period. Okay? Number two, and this was a very important one, still is, debt. I was telling some of my students today, was it today or yesterday, about Confessions of an Economic Hitman, you remember? Have any of you heard of this one? Confessions of an Economic Hitman. It's a book written by John Perkins, who used to work for a very nebulous, opaque bank. No one had ever heard of this bank. But it was formed in the 1950s by the IMF, the CIA, and the American State Department. And it had only one job, to lend money to developing countries that were raw material producers in order to indebt them. Once you are in my debt, I control you. Okay? And this bank had 4,000 employees. But no one ever heard of this bank, you see. But it would go to country after country offering loans. And if the president did not accept the loan, they were killed. And he gives two examples of presidents who were killed when they did not accept the loan. You see, the lending is also very important to trap the country. It's very important. It's part of that process. I teach in Suriname. And Suriname in recent times had a huge foreign exchange reserve. So big they didn't need to borrow money. And then one of my students, who was very high up in government, he said, you know, the IMF is trying to convince us to borrow money from foreigners. Why? I thought, duh, you know, sorry about this, but, you know, this is the game. And in the end, Suriname did borrow this money because the IMF said, if foreigners lend to you, then everyone will think Suriname is such a strong economy that foreigners are interested in lending to you. You understand? Before Lula came to power, you know, the previous president in Brazil, Cardoso, his predecessor, took a gigantic international loan. No necessity for taking the loan. Why? Because once I catch you with the debt strings, I hold you forever. You are my prisoner. Okay, so debt has been this huge spider's web which has trapped sub-Saharan Africa and keeps them held there. Aid, debt. We have a third structure which is again not known by many people, but it's something that was put in place and continues to this very day. With no one discussing it, no one says anything about it, it is monopoly buying structures. This is for all raw materials and basic agricultural goods produced by developing countries. There are only four or five Western multinationals that buy all those goods. And they collude between them. So if you take any major product, these Western multinationals, they collude between them. Even if we go down to banana production, we had a PhD done here at the ISF, and the person showed that the four or five major multinationals, they collude, and in order to make sure their control is total, what they do is they force all the producers to produce the same uniform banana. You know, the crap you buy in the West and has no taste at all. You go to any developing country, you know how a banana tastes, don't you? There's so many of them, lots of varieties, but we only market one or two types, so we have control, you see. If you don't produce at the price I want you to produce, I go to the next country. You see, we get control. So these buyers, they impose that control, and they keep pushing the prices down and down and down. Okay, this is the game. No one says anything about it. There are no commissions of inquiry to say, this is illegal what you're doing. The WTO has nothing to say about this. But sorry to say, you know, if banana prices rose 10 times, especially for people like me who love bananas, okay, I protest. I like my living standards. Okay, it's the same with all the other raw materials, you see. We're all benefiting. We're complicit. We're actually complicit in this because we will protest and shout out if the situation ever changed. Okay, now we come to those international institutions. And I must tell you this from the outset. Don't think of them as wicked. IMF, World Bank, WTO. We always think evil creatures. Horrible. It's not. It's just economics. It's economic warfare. The rich declare war on the poor. It happens everywhere. It happens in a country. The rich control the government. Of course they do. You really believe you have democracy? Come on. You know, I mean, grow up. This is not about people living in democratic systems. What we have is the rich control. The rich set up these institutions explicitly to control the poor countries. And they don't give them much room for maneuver. Which incidentally, when the IMF starts talking of poverty alleviation, you should also understand that there's another game there also starting to play, which I'm going to come back to later. But what do these institutions do? What does the IMF do? What is structural adjustment about? It's about making sure countries keep producing what we want them to produce. We make sure they have recurrent balance of payments problems. You notice these countries never get out of balance of payments problems. You notice that? Whereas countries that never took IMF support are always out of balance of payments problems. But the countries that are continuously getting advice and support by the IMF, they're always in balance of payments problems. Why? Because that's the way we keep our stranglehold on them. And that's what we have done. We have done, the IMF and the World Bank. And they've also done something very, very important. And that is they have destroyed the self-sufficiency of these countries. Colonization started it. Okay, one of the most important things is we destroy food self-sufficiency. Okay, and the World Bank continued it. They forced most countries to eliminate all food subsidies and food support. Okay, because once you don't produce your own food, I increase my control over you. How do we know this? Well, very funny thing happened some years ago. Not so funny, actually. It involved starvation of a large number of people in Malawi. Okay? Many of you could remember this because it was really tragic. But the Malawian finance minister, who was under terrible threat at the time, suddenly broke ranks and he said, well, do you know why we had this famine? Because one of the conditions of the loan given by the World Bank was we destroyed all our grain surplus stocks. Why? Because remember, we want you dependent. 1970s, the US Senate, the US Congress said, we will not allow Latin America to produce their own food. We will start a strategy involving the IMF and the World Bank to destroy food self-sufficiency of Latin America. Then they will indeed be our true backyard. And that's exactly what they've done. Look at all the Latin American countries. Look at them. They used to be food self-sufficient, but they're no longer food self-sufficient. Now here comes the kicker. This is the beautiful part of it. I congratulate them. You know I admire them because they do it so well. Okay? I know it sounds really perverse. But we have now in the WTO something called the Agreement on Agriculture. Okay?
We would like to welcome you to the MPH Radio. You are listening to a documentary, which you can go on YouTube, titled Why the West Won't Africa Poor. As you listen to this documentary, there were some interesting things that were stated. They're going to be directly related to our topic that we're going to discuss at this point in time, which is 328 million ton of gold in Uganda. We recently discovered that they have over 328 million tons of gold in Uganda. What does that mean for the overall well-being of Africa and African people? We'd like to hear your thoughts on this particular question and issue as you dial in 818-337-0016. Hit 1 and we will acknowledge your last four numbers. But let me just preface some interesting points that were just mentioned in this documentary that we were just listening to. Why the West Won't Africa Poor. Stated that it's an economic war between the rich and the poor. You talk about how all the major global institutions are structured to keep Africa impoverished. You talk about this whole question, this whole issue of keeping Africa poor means to continue to allow Africa to do what it has been doing. And he made a really interesting statement about if you're talking about development, you must talk about the importance of manufacturing, industrialization. And these are two components of an economic system in which they have historically and continually historically to deprive Africa from developing. He talked about how aid has been used to keep regimes in power, and so they can continue to dominate Africa. So keep all of these factors in mind as we discuss our topic today, 328 million tons of gold in Uganda. We now would like to open up the discussion to see people, what they think about what may happen, going to happen, and how to address this whole question. Good resources, and how do we make it benefit us? So we're going to have Brother Alex come back in. And Brother Alex, when you heard about the 328 million tons of gold in Uganda, what ideal thoughts came to your mind as relates to that reality? Brother Alex, you can leave us on. You can leave us
okay,
on with the discussion.
Okay, Mr. Lee. When I first heard about it, I thought about the history books in America when they always discovered gold somewhere in these United States. And I remember one particular time when they found gold in California. They found gold in the Black Hills. Wherever they found gold, it was a mad rush to get to it. Because, see, with gold comes industry, investment. banking opportunities. People build houses and settlements overnight. Places become boom towns. And so that's mostly how a lot of this continent manifests from sea to sea, because there was something found that was important to one group of people that saw the investment opportunities. And so when we look at Africa, there's not been a lot of investments in the continent by the United States, the Europeans, and different Arabs and different ones have, even the Asians have invested in Africa for years. Uganda itself was under the rule of the United Kingdom. But that was later, because you're talking about a country itself that's over 5,000 years old. So with 5,000 years of history before, and only until the 15th, almost 16th century before the English got there. And the English were the only ones that began to first explore the country, not only through the slaves being removed, but also the minerals and whatever content that they could find to put on the market. So when we talk about gold, people get excited. People want to start investing. And now we're talking about trillions of dollars. But this gold is not easily coming out of the ground, and it's going to have to be financed. So some huge investments are going to have to be made. There are going to be a lot of job opportunities. Now, who can control this huge amount of wealth will be one of the biggest players in history, because this is a huge find. And you're dealing with a country that only has about 45,000 soldiers to protect itself. So with that few amount of soldiers, I'm pretty sure that the neighbors all around Uganda have their eyes open, because this is also a moment for them to either invest or either to try and take some of this wealth away by any means necessary. Because again, gold brings out the worst in us. So you get to a point you can't trust a mother, a father, a brother, or anyone when it comes to this type of wealth. The country will have to be careful in all its negotiations with anyone deciding to come in, because the United States has over 800 military bases or installations around the world. 10% of our armed forces are deployed. So when we look at these numbers, will we, because we're everywhere, also threaten their security to become a major player to secure some of that gold for the United States? There's nobody's army bigger. There's nobody's navy bigger. There's nobody's air force bigger. We number one. So how much bullying will we even incorporate on this country? But this country needs schools, needs hospital. It needs food. It needs shelters to be built, homes, business investment. There are so many things that the country needs. And so will we come there with our hands out to take something away, or will we be bringing something to the table as a fair trade for the riches that we will take away from there? So I urge those people in Uganda to be extremely careful of any deals that they make with anyone. And I turn it back over to you, and I want to listen to what some of the callers may have to say today.
Thank you, Alex. Our next caller, we're going to 0673. 328 million tons of gold in Uganda. They projected at the minimum the wealth. Worth the wealth of over $128 trillion at minimum. Carla, when you heard about this, what were some of the things that came to your mind? 0673. Yeah,
hold up, African. Can you hear me? Can you hear me, African? Hold up.
Hold up, African. How you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
All right. They didn't find, all right, you can hear me. All right. They didn't find 320 tons of gold in Uganda. What they found, what it really was in the discovery, you got 31 million ores, and they can extract 320 tons of gold from those ores. And not only gold, but iron, copper, cobalt. So they're having it. So now, you're getting into mining. So it's not a discovery because they always knows what's in the ground. It's called untapped potential. When they count their wealth, they count what's in the bank and real estate and all that stuff. But they don't count untapped potential. So they know what's in the ground because Uganda is not the only place. You got it in the Congolese Mountains. You got it in Ghana. It just has to be mined. Now, what it reminds me of Cuba, because they're trying to have these mines state-owned. It reminds me of Cuba when you got Africans in the sugar field and all day long in the hot sun, and instead of they benefiting from their labor, the money goes out to outsiders instead of those on the inside. So we got to look at that when you out there and you're mining and you're doing your labor right. Where is the wealth going to? Is it going to those outside, China, and everywhere else? These are things that we have to be concerned about. But it's not rare. It's not rare. What they've done is create rarity. They create scarcity. They say when it comes to diamonds, the diamonds not rare. They're all on the ground. But Africans would not touch it because the arms and legs would be taken from them. So same with the gold. It was always there. It's just whether it's untapped, you know, whether it's been mined or not. So what the article suggests that you got 31 million ores, and from these ores can be extracted iron, copper, cobalt, and gold. And you can extract 320 million tons of gold from these ores. So it hasn't been extracted yet. It has to be mined. So the question remains now is that these mining companies will probably be Chinese, and they might make some state own. How does the Africans benefit from it? Because you got these machines coming in, and you got some labor forces. How does, once you extract this gold from these ores, how does Africans benefit? And that's my contribution, brother.
Thank you, Carla. Let's go to our next caller. Caller 6029. It has been reported. We heard our last caller gave a more detailed analysis of the situation based on his understanding. But at least it has been reported that over 320 million tons of gold in Uganda have been so-called discovered. What is the implication of that? How do you think the world will respond to it? And what should be African people globally respond to it? Is this discovery that should only benefit Africans, Uganda, or is it something that should be beneficial to all the African people? How do we begin to reassess the resources that is in possession of African people? Carl, what's your take on this?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, well, that's no question. The discovery of this gold, it has potential to be beneficial for the entire continent. It's simply a question of how you use it. Now, in terms of the extraction of these metals, one of the things I think we have to take into consideration is that the West has a very deep relationship Africa has a deep relationship with the West. In that context, we understand that the West position is that it's not one in terms of equity in terms of dealing with African people, but it's one in terms of how they can actually turn this business venture into the benefit of the West, in particular Western investors. So clearly African leaders have some questions to consider in terms of, you know, specifically how they proceed in terms of, you know, mining these gold, these metals, but more importantly, you know, dissemination of assets from those metals in terms of who gets what. So, but one more important thing, one thing I want to raise, though, brother, I think, you know, one of the things I think is important because of the this announcement of these large amount of gold, there's no question Western nations are very much alert, you know, in terms of latest development in terms of this gold, these large reserves of gold oil, or that exists in the mines in Uganda. It's very, very true that Western states are very much clear in terms of Africa's resources, and that's no question about that. And so this development, while it may be new to you and me, Western leaders are probably were aware in terms of this development, but the mere fact is the development has been made public puts more pressure on Western states, or in particular Western leaders, to do something in terms of getting their hand on these gold reserves. Now, here's a point that we haven't stated in terms of why it's so important for Western leaders to get a hold of these gold reserves. One of the things we have to understand is that, you know, historically, it's always been, certainly since 1930s, it's been a unipolar world. In other words, the United States has been the sole power in terms of determining the fate of the world when it comes to economics. Now, that unipolar world is under threat from countries like Russia, China, Iran. So by imposing their will, inevitably, what's going to happen, you're going to have the emergence of a multipolar world, which means that economics will not be only controlled by the United States, but also but it will be controlled by Russia, China, Iran as well, which means that the kind of sharp exploitation practiced by Western states, in particular the United States, becomes problematic for them to actually execute. So that gives Africa somewhat of an opening in terms of being able to deal with different people in terms of economically, in terms of getting the best deal in terms of the mining of those gold oil. Now, but also I think one of the things that what is also important, when we talk about the importance of this gold, we have to keep in mind that because when we talk about this unipolar world, one of the things that make the United States so powerful is the mere fact, you know, not only do they call the shots, but they can actually create currency out of thin air. This currency called fiat currency is not backed by anything. It has no value. The only value it actually has is the value of the military to actually force people or compel people to actually accept that dollar. Now, with a multipolar world, this whole fiat currency becomes problematic for the U.S., in particular in terms of reinforcing its mandates, which means that the world, in the context of multipolar world, looks for a means of exchange which is fair across the board. No longer do you have a system in place in which people unilaterally decide the value of currency. Now you have a multipolar world with saying that we want a currency that exists which has equal value across the board, irrespective of what nation we're talking about. So the only means of exchange in terms of affording people, you know, fairness across the board in terms of monetary exchange is gold or silver. Now, when you talk about these large gold reserves in Uganda, it has potential in terms of setting Uganda free in terms of being able to make its own decisions. Because as the world moves away from the unipolar world into the multipolar world, the whole emphasis becomes the importance of those exceptional metals like gold and silver. So countries with huge sums of gold will have a position to actually control their own destiny. In the context of U.S. foreign policy, that constitutes a real threat in terms of imperialism. So they must find a way in terms of, you know, in terms of undermining or minimizing the influence of having access to such amount of gold reserves. Now, understand, hundreds of tons of gold are stolen out of Africa every year, you know, by Western states and China as well, I might add. And so, therefore, to the extent that Uganda, you know, can build that wealth and sustain that wealth in terms of gold, it's going to determine to a large extent the political parameters in which they establish to fight corruption, to police, you know, its reserves. Those kind of things are pivotal. My concern is that historically speaking, we look at the level of corruption that exists among African leaderships. I'm very much concerned whether or not many of the African leaders will capitulate and play ball with the West in terms of simply sneaking hundreds and hundreds of tons of this gold out at a time in favor of, you know, payments, you know, under the table. So clearly, brother, I think that when we talk about in terms of the response of the West in terms of this latest development in terms of all this gold, we got to understand that as well. We understand that it's always been there in terms of monitoring the situation, because they understand the richness of resources that Africa contains. The problem is that, you know, now that everyone knows that these riches are available, it means it becomes a scramble, you know, for those resources. And I'm afraid that unless African leadership are very, very wise in terms of their strategy, then I'm afraid that they're going to be manipulated or exploited by the West because of greed, avarice, or what have you. So now, let me press close with that because I keep talking on and on and on, but I'll close with that.
All right, thank Carl. Hold on. We'll come back to y'all later. Let's try caller 3016 and ask for number 3016. Your thoughts on this issue, 3016. Welcome to MPH Radio. 3016, question or comment? Okay, let's move from caller 3016. Let's go to caller 7236. Caller 7236. Your thoughts on this many times ago that was found in Uganda. 7236.
Your question, please, sir, again.
Yes, your comment or question on this issue.
Thank you. I am delighted to hear this fantastic discussion on economics and the taking control of raw materials and their sales in developing countries and the impact the International Monetary Fund has had. In addition, it shows the reason for collective unity amongst African and developing nations on selling raw materials, including commodities such as fruit, cotton, and other things, because as the presenter says, the capitalists and the imperialists and the neo-colonialists kind of work together, but more importantly, the capitalists seem to run down prices by just going from place to place, reducing the profitability of the commodity. But I just want to thank you. That's my main comment, and I will continue listening. Thank you.
All right, thank you, caller. That's my caller 4298. Your thoughts, caller 4298. Welcome to MPH Radio, 4298.
Thank you, thank you. First of all, you know, pardon my ignorance, but I just don't know. And I'm trying to do a Marxist analysis of this situation, and which means a concrete analysis of concrete conditions. When we start fundamentally, is who owns the raw materials? Like, does the state own it? Or is it private property? And I suspect it's private property. So the whole question is moot. Does somebody know who owns this property? Thank you.
Okay, anybody would like to respond to that? From my understanding, Carlo, it seems to be an implication that it's owned by the state and not owned by any particular private company. That is my understanding. Maybe I come back with Alex and we'll come back to the other callers who are still on the line and see maybe if they can also address the question. Brother Alex, what would be your general synopsis on most likely that kind of wealth in the country? Looking at the history of Uganda, Africa, if it based on by the state, was it privately owned? Based on the report, it seemed like more state owned. I heard the government speak, and he spoke of it as in the concept of it owned by the government and the state and not an individual. That was what I heard coming from, you know, the president of Uganda. Based on what you heard so far, Brother Alex, any response to some of the things that has been articulated so far?
Yes. You got different minds there in Uganda, and it's actually called the Republic of Uganda. So when we look at the system of government there and how it's structured, and from the takeover of the country, I guess you could say, by Idi Amin many years ago, and you have a current president has been voted in a few times, but sometimes, you know, the rich often sticks together and make partnerships or whatever. So strange ownership rights come about. And there are some private mines, and then there are state-owned mines. So depending on where the wealth was found, I'm pretty sure it was more in the state-owned, because it's with most private owners, you wouldn't blast too much news about what you got, because sooner or later the state of the government would try its best to take it from you. So I'm pretty sure that it comes mostly from the state control or the national control, you know, of the government itself. And they, you know, made the announcement to make sure that they got that investment, you know, in the country by companies wanting to compete and with contracts and different things like that. So this is going to be an ongoing situation where the country officials can really dictate where they're going to go in the future, because deals of this sort is going to take years to get this ore out of the ground, reprocessed and sealed out. So you say if you're mining, and we're just throwing figures out there, if you're mining 30,000 tons, now you have a potential to mine 75,000 tons, then you're going to get a heap more of investment in your country. But that's all you can take out because of your capacity. Maybe the next year you can go up to 80, 90, 100,000 tons. You maybe can keep increasing your tonnage from the mines, but it's going to be a gradual thing. It's not where you can just go in there and get it all out tomorrow. It's going to take time and investment. And then these shipments, just like the gentleman said before, they are going to have to be secured, basically, because there's always some type of theft or mischief when it comes to great wealth like this. So if the country or the leadership of the country stands firm and stands strong, it can do so many great things, not only for Uganda, but also for all its neighboring countries, the whole of Africa itself. And it can be a leader and show other countries how to take the upper hand and bargain for the best bargain that you can get for the reserves you have, and not just take any type of offer because it was given to you before. And I turn it back over to you.
Okay, let me go on back to our callers earlier. They may have some additional comments. Caller, based on what you have heard so far, we're going back to caller 0673. Give yourself a chance to add any additional ideas or thoughts you may have, caller 0673.
Yes, I can't answer the sister's question right, but it has to do with mineral rights. It's just like certain rights to land and water rights and all those things. I guess it's got something to do with the state. But what I want to offer is a solution. Number one, I have a question. I don't know the answer to. Maybe somebody can answer that question. Do Africans own? Our Africans own the equipment to mine, but most likely it's going to be China and Russia and the United States doing the mining. What can happen, though, is that the state, or whoever the governor head is, can make sure, like Castro and Cuba, make sure that Africans benefit as a result. It's just like any business venture. You come in and you're making a profit because you're coming in with your equipment and you're mining the oil for all the mineral wealth that you can extract from the oil, whether it's gold, cobalt, iron, whatever, right? So now you're making a profit. Now you got Africans in there, so you got to, so whoever's head of state got to make sure that when these contracts are made, that somehow that the state which I mean the state, the country is benefiting from it. So that has to be done, or you're going to have another United States investors like you did in Cuba, and the Africans in Cuba got the sugar cane and they're working in the hot sun, but the money is going back to the United States and those outside. So that's my suggestion. But I would say this, though, watch for who the head of state is, because if it's a government, somebody the United States or Russia or China had pretty much backing, that person head of state, then most likely that person might be working for their interests. Goes back to what Brother Haki said earlier, right? You got to watch for a corrupt government in Uganda who is not working for the benefit of the people, but working for the benefit of those outside investors. So we got to watch that. But there's a solution, a good solution that could be as a result of this, and that is depending on who the head of the state is.
And
that's
Carla, my contribution. Thank you, Carla. Thank you for raising the issue of the role of neocolonialism. Because if you look at Africa today, most of the governments are neocolonial. Most of them are owned and controlled by outside forces. And I think with that, that's why the issue of Pan-Africanism today comes such an important understanding of people need to know what that is and how it should be properly driven towards achieving it as a goal, as a people. Because fundamentally, when we talk about the concept of Pan-Africanism and we talk about African wealth, we won't be speaking about this wealth in the context of an individual country, but a context from a global continent and global people globally, and how to utilize these resources to benefit all of us, which means we must have some kind of organized, collective process that will guide and direct our economies, our thoughts. So, you know, this is even more important today. Now, looking at what's going on and understanding the need for understanding this concept of Pan-Africanism. But thank you, Carla, for your contribution to this program today. We next will go back to Carla 6029 and the further thoughts, Carla. And Carla, what do you think about this question now of looking at African resources, not from the context of a micro perspective of a state, but more continental, more global as relates to the benefit and development of African people as a whole, such as, you know, what the concept of Pan-Africanism expressed. Carla, your response.
Yeah, well, of course, the question is microeconomics, and the question is what can we do to take those resources to benefit people throughout the world? Of course, that is the quintessential question. But I think more importantly, Brother, I think before we even get to the question around microeconomics, we have to seriously think about in terms of commodity prices. One of the things, as the your piece earlier alluded to, is the commodity prices are not set by African states in terms of their resources. The commodity prices, well, African resources are determined by not only, you know, Western multinationals institutions, but also by World Bank, particularly the World Bank, who in turn, once those resources are taken out of the ground and once they're en route to the West, it is the World Bank that establishes the price of those commodities. So we have a fundamental problem in terms of prices of commodities because Africans don't price their commodities. So even though Uganda has abundance of gold, oil, it doesn't really matter if they don't control the commodity prices of that oil, of that gold, oil. In essence, they could very easily, you know, sell large amounts, you know, gold oil to the West, without really being any really concrete benefit in terms of actually selling that oil simply because of the commodity prices. So Uganda has a bit of a conundrum to concern itself with, and that is, do you sell a commodity at at prices less than the market rate, or do you simply hold on to commodity in terms of maybe at a future time, given the desperation for gold, particularly in the multipolar world, the possibility that you need a fair price for your gold oil. So that is the fundamental question in terms of the dilemma facing Uganda in terms of gold. So unless Africa is willing to collectively stand up and say, listen, what we have to do, we have to create an independent bank. we have to have a we have to have an independent Bank of Africa. We have to have it. The independent Bank of Africa would allow African states to establish the prices of its commodities. Also, in terms of its trade relationship with the West, and more importantly, its currency, because currently now, as it currently exists, the currency of Africa doesn't have any value whatsoever. It has zero value. As a matter of fact, in order for African states to borrow money from the IMF or the World Bank, it has to do so in Western currencies. In other words, it has to go to Western states to borrow under the auspices of the Western states to borrow money, at an interest rate determined by those Western states. In 9 out of 10, those Western states set interest rates at the exorbitant level, and again, to ensure that Africa remain impoverished. So clearly, Uganda got a problem. I would like to see Uganda simply hold on to the the gold commodity until they can get a favorable deal in terms of the export of that gold. I would like to see that, but only time will tell, and we'll wait and see what happens.
Take your call and speak to that point. You remind me of a point that Atmir Secretary Prince President Guinea made when he was talking about economic development. And he took the position with educating his people that this question of resources on the ground not only does it belong to the people, but if they are not organized to benefit and control the wealth from their resources, his position was to allow it to stay in the ground. And I think that's sometimes African people today need to take a look at that policy. We should set the pace when and how well development would take place, based upon our interests and our needs. Thank you, Carlo. Let's go to Carlo. Come back to Carlo 7236. Another comment, Carlo 7236 on this topic today. 7236. Carlo 7236, the mic is yours. Okay, I guess the caller has nothing else to say. We go to our last caller for this discussion. Brother 42. Call of 4298. 4298, your final thoughts on this topic, 4298.
Yeah, well, it seems that the state-owned raw materials and natural resources, and therefore the people should benefit from it. The problem is, if the government isn't talking revolution, it's not revolution. And so I don't know that much about the leadership of Uganda, but I didn't know there was any kind of revolutionary motions going on there in terms of the government. And so how peace possibly could benefit, I don't know. Anyway, I thank you for allowing me to speak. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank all that callers for that input on today's topic, 328 million tons of gold in Uganda. This is a topic, as Brother Alex stated earlier, going to be ongoing. But also, it's an issue that's going to be ongoing as well, because we constantly must ask ourselves as African people, and Africa being at home and abroad, is how do we best utilize our resources? Do we use resources in put it on markets when the people are not in position to better benefit from it? Are we better off leaving these resources in the ground until we are organized to be able to compete in these so-called global markets? As earlier in the documentary stated, this is an economic warfare. They want to keep Africa in privacy. Two-thirds of the whole, we have no interest. Allow Africa to become a manufacturing and industrialization vehicle. Or two, because it would not only change the dynamic of the world, but what it also would do is force the West to now to have to deal with some of their own internal problems as it relates to subsidizing their lifestyle to interest. So this is one of the many missing pages of history that we must continue to feel. What we're going to do, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we can have our sister Mary Hunt. If you're on the line listening, we can actually hit one. When she come back, she would do a poem for us. And then we will have our final thoughts for today's program. Again, Sister Mary Hunt, if you can hear my voice, please hit one. And we will come back and she would do a poem for us. This is Missing Pages of History.
All I want to say is that they don't really care about us.
Right. All I want to say is they don't really care about us. That has been our history since their arrival to our home, Africa, and since their arrival on the shore. But if they don't care about us, do we care about us? That is the question. What we're going to do right now, we're going to make a couple announcements, and then we're going to bring in Minister Mary Hunt. She has a poem she would like to share with us. And then we're going to go to our final thoughts. So right now, one of the things Mr. Page of History wants to do is become a community awareness institution where we talk about what's going on in our community as it relates to different activities and issues. We can come and tell you on the 26th of June at 12 p.m. there will be a webinar organized by the AAPRPGC where they will be celebrating the revolutionary life of Kwame Ture. Many will know him as formerly as Stokely Carmichael. He was born June 29, 1941, and he made a transition on November 15, 1998. The theme of the program is Student Spark Revolution. For more information, please go to their website at www.aaprp-gc.org. Again, that's June 26th, about 12 p.m. Eastern Time. There is a celebration on the revolutionary life of Kwame Ture. So you might want to check that out. Please do so. Also, we'd like to just share with you, for those who haven't reserved their seat yet, please do so, not too late. MPH is working with the African Women Association as they take their annual Education on Black Historical Travel Challenge Tour to Cuba on July the 23rd through the 31st, leaving from Cancun, Mexico. It's a trip of your lifetime. If you need to go, check Cuba out. Go and see for yourself all the beautiful things Cuba has offered the world and all the beautiful things they continue to do as it relates to helping the African communities throughout the world and humanity. Come and take that tour. And one of the best human investments you can make is to expose our people to another alternative of where there can be a better world. And what's a good spot to go to Cuba and see for yourself again. That trip will be from July the 23rd to the 31st. For more information, you can email the African Awareness Association at AfricanAwarenessAssociation2@gmail.com. Please check that out. So those are some of the activities. And last but not least, in New York City, Cuba, and Puerto Rico, there will be events on June the 25th p.m., that's a Saturday. There will be a We Stand With the World in the U.S. Block K. Yes, that will be on the 25th of June, and you might want to check that out. At the location, this event will be at E or F train to Roosevelt Avenue, stop on 7th Main Street and 74. That's the location, which will be at the Diversity Plaza at 73rd and 74th Street. That event will be on June 25th. That's a Saturday. We Stand With the World in the U.S. blockade against Cuba. So that will be an Independence Day for Puerto Rico Now event. That event is to join this historical rally on the 50th anniversary of the case of Puerto Rico before the United Nations. That will be held at the United Nations. Again, this will be Monday, June the 20th from 7 to 4 p.m. You might want to check that out. That's also going to be held at the Plaza, which is located on 47th and 1st Avenue. So check some of the events out. Those are some of the activities that are going on in your community. And now what we'll do is turn the mic over and bring in Minister Mary Hunt. She has a poem that she would like to share with us. Sister Mary, welcome to MPH Radio.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lee. I just want to thank you for having me here today to read this poem, and I pray that it will be a blessing to others. It actually is a poem that God placed on my heart that I wrote. Unfortunately, I'm going through a cancer battle now, and it is my second cancer battle. So the name of my poem is Never Give Up, and this was written by me. God is with you. Paul was shipwrecked, beaten, tossed, and turned around, falsely imprisoned, hungry and thirsty, lost at sea, but he never gave up on God. God is around you. Job suffered at the hands of Satan with boils on his face and all over his body. His children were killed, livestock destroyed, and he lost everything, but he never gave up on God. Never give up. God is above you. King David lost his child. He suffered depression and persecution by Saul, but he had conflict with the Philistines. In the peak of his reign, he had nothing but enemies, but he never gave up on God. Never give up. Paul was blessed with the gift of miracles, and many blessings were upon his life. Job got back double for his sufferings in the second half of his life. King David was freed from Saul, and God gave him rest from his enemies. So in everlasting, he was blessed. God is with you. God is around you. God is above you, and God is beneath you. Romans 8:28, and we know that God causes everything to work together for the good and of those who love and are called according to his purpose for them. Romans 8:31, what can we say about such wonderful things? If God is for us, we can never be against us. Psalms 121:1-2, I look to the mountains. Does my help come from there? My help, I'm talking about my help, it comes from the Lord who created heaven and earth. Never give up.
Sister Murray, we'd like to thank you for your poem. We also will express what's the word for cloud to heal.
Thank you.
In the condition you're in, but like you said, don't give up. Through positive thinking, all things is possible, and we stand with you and we love you. Don't you know?
Thank you so much. I love you all too. God said that this wasn't just for me, but a lot of other people needed to hear it this morning because the world has gone upside down. So, amen. God is with you. Don't give up.
All right. Thank you, Sister Murray. Now, in closing, I would like to go back to Alice, get his final thoughts. I will have a few comments, and like always, you know, we will continue to move forward as we fill in our missing pages of history. Brother Alex, your final thoughts for tonight, for today.
Again, Mr. Lee, I have to say thank you for giving us an opportunity to share some knowledge today. Because one thing that the African-American community has probably the least knowledge about, and that is to control their future by wealth. Of all the great riches in the world, whether it be oil, gas, gold, food commodities, or whatever, our greatest resource is our minds. If we do not use them collectively and united, anyone can take anything from you. Learned experience counts so much in this world. History repeats itself over and over. We must learn the lessons of our fathers. The riches of Egypt and Africa have been plundered for thousands of years. But yet and still, there are many who fight to survive, to bring the continent together. Whether it's that considered now the New African Union, born out of the Organization of African Unity, where countries have came together and have repulsed a lot of the European and Asian and American attacks, not only on their economy, on their leaders, but on their resources to get the wealth of Africa out of her at the cheapest expense, because they don't want to put a lot in, but they want to take everything out. Our knowledge of business, how to trade, is far behind the rest of the world. Africa has done an outstanding job and has led the world in production of a lot of the resources that we need. But they have not been compensated for what they have been given. So we need to understand their plight, and we also need to make an investment in these countries. Whether you're traveling there or whether you're seeking economic development for their infrastructure or anything, we have people of color, millionaires and billionaires. Will they get on board and see the opportunities also? This doesn't always have to be a European, Arab, or Asian thing. This can also be a people of color thing. But do we have the unity among us to take that risk and that chance to invest in Africa herself? Africa invested in us years ago, and we don't even realize that the potential that was there. And we repulsed many of the times that we could have made investment in our African history from this country, but we failed. And others took advantage of that. So all the way back to the slave trade, Africa has been contributing to the United States and the African Americans who live here. But we have not been given back on equal terms. So will we become unified also and get in this opening market of what could be potentially a windfall for many of us? I thank you for a wonderful program. Again, I've learned so much. And I thank Mary for giving a wonderful, wonderful, inspiring form. So thank you very much, Mr. Lee. I'll turn it back over to you.
And like always, Alex, we thank you for your contributions that you make into what you make into today's program, Alex. And, of course, our sister Mary, we wish the best. And she's going to be all right. We know she's going to be all right. Think positive, and anything can come up positive. And to our listening audience, this has been MPH Radio. Our theme today, the 328 million ton of gold in Uganda. We also would like to wish everyone a happy Father's Day, but personally for me, it's hard to try to understand what do people mean when they say happy Father's Day, when we look at a world that is so anti-father, so anti-children. We're looking at a world and live in a country where it has no respect for the concept of family nor for the concept of father. It kills children by millions. And undeveloped children by millions. It has a positive where they believe that human investment is not the best investment. They invest in things, not people. So, but anyway, if you are a father, I hope that you think about not only your children, but children of the world. We are their fathers as well. So on that note, we see you in 2 weeks, and we will continue to strive to go forever. I continue to help fill in our missing pages of history. We thank you for allowing us to come into your homes this evening. And remember, MPH, we are here for you and all of us. Thank you.
here, we are here. Bombs over Baghdad, trying to get something we never had. Let's start with a good dad. So real, but it's so sad. And while we burning this incense, we gon' pray for the innocent. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about Chi-Town. Let's talk about Gaza. Let's talk about Israel. Right now with Israel. Let's talk Nigeria. In a mass hysteria. Yeah, our souls are brought together so that we could love each other, brother. We save the nation with no support for education. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about our part. My heart touch your heart. Let's talk about living. Had enough of dying. That's what we all about. Let's do more giving. Do more forgiving. Yeah. Our souls were brought together so that we could love each other. Sister, we are here.
While we are here,